Yo, talk about a real entrepreneur, Randy Harriman, today on this episode. Super excited to have him on. Welcome back, by the way, to the Vegepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Oz, and this is a podcast for vegan entrepreneurs just like yourself, whether you're vegan or not, who want to change the world and build a mass movement around what they believe in. I'm super excited. Like I said, man, this guy is the definition of what it means to be a vegan entrepreneur. Super excited. Started off in poker. He's going to talk all about it. Basically, right now, what he's doing, he has the veganentrepreneur.co website where he educates vegan entrepreneurs on building businesses, growing businesses, scaling businesses, and exiting successfully. Same thing for his life and business coaching business, where he's a social media business consultant helping social entrepreneurs strategize and position their business online. You can check him out at younghuman.com or on his social media, Randy Harriman, on IG, H-E-R-E-M-A-N. That was a mouthful. Anyways, besides the point, you know where to find me. I hope you enjoyed this episode talking all about pivoting as a vegan entrepreneur, how you look at your life process and not being attached necessarily to one specific activity, because you're always going to be changing. And as you know, change is the only constant. Wow, way to put things together, right? Besides the point, you know where to find me, at Vegepreneur on IG. If you want to sign up for the Dollar Vegepreneur Club, where you'll get lifetime free access to the best vegan entrepreneur resource, go to vegepreneur.com and sign up today for your lifetime free trial. Anyways, enjoy. Initially, take us back to that initial spark way back when your entrepreneurial journey started. Like, do you remember a moment that initiated it? Do you remember a conversation? What was it for you?
Well, I think like I never heard about the word entrepreneur until about 2 years ago, I would say. Okay. So, when I was always very entrepreneurial and all the tendencies around being an entrepreneur, like I did all the hustles, the side hustles and the following your passion and solving the problems and all these things, but I never knew what was an entrepreneur. Sorry?
Like what before, for example, you mentioned like the hustle and like, what was that specifically?
I never really followed the system which I was brought up in. So when I first saw a computer, I was in love and I was like digging in pretty fast, burning CDs with Napster for my friends, and soon learned how to build websites, started coding in PHP and MySQL and all these things. And I did I built a website and sold it to my uncle when I was like 13. And overall, I was more into sports. Like the reason I built the website is because I would have loved to buy a kite. Like, you know, kite surfing. It's like surfing with this kite. And at the time, it was really new. So there was not a big secondhand market. So all the equipment was like you needed at least €2,500, which is about $3,000, I would say.
Sorry to interrupt. What year was that?
Good question. I was about when I first discovered kitesurfing, I think I was about 14.
Wow.
So now I'm 31. So that's like 16 years ago. So like 2002, 2001, I would say.
Okay. Wow. Cool.
And then I, it was too much money, so I couldn't really do it. So I was skateboarding a lot and I got a surf set from my, an uncle of my a friend of my parents, and surfing was not kite surfing, and I really wanted to kite surf. So then when I was 16, I started kite surfing, and I worked my way through it, did a payment plan, and then like figured my way out to finally get the equipment. And a year later, I was a professional kite surfer, and I started traveling the world, competing World Cup competitions and getting sponsors, international sponsors. And I did that for about 5 years, I would say, 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. And then I broke my ACL. That's my dog. I broke my ACL, and then my sponsors basically dropped me out of nowhere.
Wow.
Like, they were like, yeah, okay, well, you can't promote us this next year, so we won't sponsor you next year. And that's when I really realized that I was just a product.
Right, exactly.
I helped them build their brands in my niche for the past 3 to 5 years. And now I have like an issue where I really need their support, and then they just drop me. So that really killed my motivation to be a professional athlete, because in kitesurfing, because it's such a niche market, there's not a lot of money, and there's probably never going to be a lot of money. And just as being the athlete, like nowadays with social media, you could build a whole personal brand around it. But at that time, there was no YouTube, there was no Facebook, there was nothing. I had my own website, I had my own blog, and I even started my own like little business called Stock07, which it never really got off the ground. But the idea was then to help other riders promote themselves better by helping them, not create content, but find collaborations with photographers and videographers, and then use that content to sell it to the magazines, and like kind of create this triangle between the content creators, the athletes, and the magazines.
Nice.
But my partner, he built on me. So then okay. I was still in the business of kitesurfing. So I put all my focus back in that, which was a shame, because I'm still very excited about that idea. So who knows, maybe in the future.
That's super cool, though.
And then I a friend of mine took me to a bar to play poker while I was in rehabilitation. And while in rehabilitation, I needed like 2 hours a day, 3 hours a day to train, and the rest was rest. So I had a lot of spare time. So when he took me there, there were 3 people getting paid, and I ended up getting 4th. And I'm still really competitive when I'm competing. Like, like I want to be in that top 3. And for me, being then 4th was a trigger for me to really like put all my empty hours that I had in trying to learn this game called online poker. And I also saw it as a way to travel the world and use the internet as a way to make money while I still followed my passion, which was kitesurfing. But the whole sponsor thing kind of killed it. And when I got back in shape, ready to compete again, I had a meeting with one of my sponsors, and I remember telling them like they wanted me to pay me like €1,000 for a whole year of wearing their brand and promoting their brand. So just to give some context, like the tickets alone would already cost €1,000 just to one location, and I had to travel to 12 to 15 locations a year. So for me, it was like, okay, these small sponsors, like they don't really like, they ask a lot, because you need to do a lot of, like they don't give the money for free. So they want you to give a lot of things in return. And for me, it was just not worth the effort anymore. So I was like, okay, well, sorry, but I'm going to quit that. And I will just put my faith in this online poker thing, and I will keep my big sponsors. And at the meantime, I will try to make a profit in online poker. This took a bit longer than expected. It was a bit like, it's hard. Poker is really a game of volume. Like you can be the best player in the world, but still lose any given time you have the best hand. So, it took me a year of competing again, and then I was really fed up with it, because my sponsors, they were really like all about the money and really treating us, the athletes, as a product and not supporting us the way I thought they should have done that. So we went to Brazil for training. We ended up buying a little house with the money we saved. And then basically we said goodbye to the professional kitesurfing life. And I just went all in on poker. Even though I never really made any stable money with it, but I was just, I will figure my way out. And I started. I won some money, but not too much. And then I got an investor who I met a few, like 2 years before that already. And we talked and we kept up to date. And he saw I was very talented in poker, and he decided to invest in me, which basically means that I play with his money and we split the difference. And if you go in depth, then the investor is taking the risk. So every time, let's say you go down in debt for $10,000, then if you make $20,000, then you first pay back the 10, and then you split the 10 that's left, which leaves you with 5. And then you start back at 0, and then you continue again. So I played like this for about 6-7 years. But we were living in Brazil, and we were living there illegally, because we were only allowed to live there for 6 months, and then we had to go back normally, but we decided to stay there and live illegally, which is not that bad of a deal, because on their website they said if you live illegally, you have to pay like $1 a day up to 180 days. So the fine would only be $180. So the risks were not that high, but still we couldn't travel. We couldn't go out of the country because if we did, we couldn't come back. And we had dogs and cats and a house and all these things. So we wanted to travel. So we decided to open up a sandwich and smoothie bar. My girlfriend or ex-wife at the time, she had the idea of starting something in the restaurant business. And I was like, yeah, well, restaurants are pretty tough. Let's start with something a little bit simpler. So then we did the sandwich smoothie bar. And that flopped basically. Like we built the building, was super nice.
Okay.
And we didn't do any market research. Like we didn't, we had the idea about what do we want? Because we were there every year for 8 years in a row or 7 years in a row. And we missed certain things, but just because we missed them didn't mean that the public or the market missed them. And we never really considered anything like that. So that was a hard lesson to learn. And even though the branding was pretty good and we used the image that we had as professional kitesurfers. So when it was the main season, this was really a kitesurfing town for like 4 or 5 months a year. So in the main season, those 4 or 5 months, we did really well. But then the low season came and like we really had nothing anymore. So I had two choices, or keep it up, change it. So we changed it to a creperia. So we started to, we changed the concept and that went a lot better. But then still the low season was too weak. And I had a choice between running the restaurant or going back to playing poker. I borrowed about 30, 40,000 euro from friends and family. So I had to pay that back. So it's like, I have to go back in play poker again because I have to pay the debt that I made. And I promised the people I would pay it back within a year. So I ended up paying back everything to everybody except for one guy. And that took me the month of January. So after that, everything was paid back. So that was a big relief. But then poker kind of continued. And then, you know, it kind of was a grind. It was continuously surviving. And I didn't really know how to manage my money well. And the moment I had money, we started to rebuild the house. And the moment the house that we rebuilt was done, I moved back to the Netherlands because me and my wife, we broke up. We got a divorce. And we were back. I was back in the Netherlands. And then after about 6-7 months, I met my current girlfriend. And she's from Spain. Yes. And it took us about a year before she was always a YouTube fan and I never knew anything about YouTube because I was never involved in that. And I didn't understand vlogging and I didn't know anything about this world, but she did. She was a big YouTube fan and she introduced me to it. And then I discovered veganism and that's like, it took me like from seeing the first speech I first saw Blackfish, the documentary, then I dove deeper. And then the next day we watched together, I think, the Gary Yourofsky speech.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we were vegan. Like it took us 2 days and then we were vegan. I did make a bunch of burgers though for my birthday. And those had eggs in them. So we finished those. But then after that, like April 30th, my birthday is the first day officially that we went vegan. And it took me about a month before I started my own YouTube channel trying to promote veganism.
Nice.
And that's slowly I discovered the internet and YouTube and the power of the media. And like, I went down a whole path. And eventually I went on the street to do street activism. Like if you go to my vlogging channel, it's not salad.com. You can still see it over there. And I did like a lot of street activism interviews. I don't know if people who are listening to this know Earthling Ed, but he inspired me big time to do that. And I was like, hey, I can do that too. And I was like, watching his content and learning so much from him. And then like Emily from Bite Size Vegan, I really started to study all these arguments and then went on the street and went out of my comfort zone and like trying to start conversations. Cause I realized that, you know, like we are who we are because of the media that shapes us, because of the content we consume and the friends we have and like the people we surround ourselves by. So I was like, all we need is people to create positive content, people to create positive messages and to create awareness so people will actually make that change because we can't force them. Like with my family, it was in the beginning a bit harder because like, come on, it's not that hard, you know, you understand, I explained it to you, it's easy, you agree, so change. But for people to change habits, it's really, really hard. And the only way they can change it in a sustainable manner is if they You know, if they raise their own awareness, if they understand it, and if they don't understand it, then they would never change it because they don't understand it. So that inspired me to make these videos. And then I saw Leonardo's documentary the day it launched on, I think, National Geographic. It's called Before the Flood. And I sat there like crying my eyes out on the sofa. I was like, I have to do more. Like, I have to do more. And a few months before that, I had this epiphany already where I was like, okay, poker is just contributing to my own well-being and my own success. Yeah. And I want to contribute to something beyond that. Like, I don't care about the money. I want to do something else. Like, I want to help create something with the skills I've learned in the past 28, 29 years at the time. And I really want to do something, but I didn't really know what. And I started with life coaching. But then I was like, of course, I had to figure out, like, how can I be a life coach? So I ordered this course on this internet website. And then I got it. And I'm really not the guy who studies from a school type of course with exams and like stuff like that. So I got the course and I opened it, and it took me about 3 or 4 days before sending it back, or at least thinking about sending it back. And then on the last day of being able to send it back, I remember sending it back. And I was like, I will do this my way. Like, I'll figure out a way of figuring out how I want it to be, because this course is teaching you how to teach other people how to live their life, basically. And I'm like, you can only, like, if you look for a coach in your life, you should only look for people who did what you want to do before.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I cannot ask somebody to coach me in ballet because I'm not a ballerina. So yeah. If you want to choose somebody to help you guide or give you direction towards something that you want to achieve, it's important that this person achieved it before you. And you wouldn't learn this from a book. Like, that was my philosophy, and I'm still agreeing with that. So that's why I sent it back. And then I went on this whole journey. And then watching the Before the Flood documentary created an insane, I don't know, like, drive to do something as an entrepreneur. And we had a shelter dog we adopted from Romania, and a cat from a farm. And the cat is called Manta, and the dog is called Lily. And my girlfriend was like, we should do something, and it would be called Lilita. And then so Lilita, the name, I loved it. And the domain name was free, lilita.com. So I immediately booked it. And then this documentary happened that same day, or maybe a day after. And that's kind of like sparked, like, did something. And I didn't sleep for the whole night. I just stayed up all night drawing IDs. And about 2 weeks later, I made this ridiculous video where I'm like presenting to the world my big vision. And it's still on YouTube. You can check it out, or you can check it out on my website, I think it's even. And I did this video and I kind of explained this whole philosophy of what I wanted to achieve and like what I wanted to do. And then I started to promote it. I started to put it in Facebook groups and then like advertise it. I think I did an advertisement on Facebook as well. And like trying to get people enthusiastic. And a lot of people like watched it, people shared it. And I think within 10 days I had like 10 people helping me out, wanting to create content, wanting to participate. And then eventually we got it up to like 30 people that we're starting to talk to that were seriously interested in helping. But then they were all volunteers and my vision was totally not clear. I didn't have any, I was going way too fast compared to the bandwidth that I had. So that kind of crashed. And then I had to go on a search. What's next? And then it took me about 5 months before I figured out the vegan entrepreneur. And then I started the Facebook group and I started to develop that vision. And now today, about, I would say, 1 year and 4 months later, the website is almost going live. I'm currently working on a project for the Vegetariërsbond, which is a vegetarian association here in the Netherlands. And I'm building out this whole YouTube platform for them. Which I'm almost done with. And when that's done, I'm about to open my own life coaching business, high performance coaching business called the Young Human Club. And then the vegan entrepreneur is kind of the community where I want to help people establish themselves online. And I do that through a Facebook group. We have a monthly meeting. And then with the businesses that want to work together with me, I also have the vegan entrepreneur, which is a branding and design consultancy.
Nice. All right, so there's a few elements I want to touch on here. First of all, going back, but first, going into the vegan space, do you feel going into the vegan entrepreneurship specifically market, do you feel there's a space for that, or do you feel it's still a bit premature? Because again, this is still very cutting edge. This veganism point, period, that is already like growing and is still at its infancy, right? When you think about it, like we're probably, I would say, I heard 2% or 7% of the people in the US are vegan, being very generous. Or like when you see it, when you see these percentages, you see that it's at its vegans are actually entrepreneurs or see themselves as go-getters, right? So
I'm sorry, I missed the last part of the question because the connection dropped.
Sure. So like, I'll just repeat it. So like, for example, just veganism per se is at its infancy, right? We're like probably 7% in the US, and that's being generous. When you look at entrepreneurs who are vegan, I feel that's even a much lower percentage. So what's your take on that? What's your take on growing that community in a space that is very, very cutting edge?
Well, I think the fact that it's still so small is the opportunity itself. I think right now, like if you want to position yourself as a digital marketer, for example, online, well, to do that right now in a space that there, which is extremely crowded, it's hard to differentiate yourself. So branding yourself as vegan is making a big difference because like I'm trying to build my company 100% vegan powered because I believe that like vegan, or not plant-based, but like vegan entrepreneurs, the ones that do it for the environment, the ethics, like, and their health, but like mostly the ethics, they don't want to invest money in a company that is then using that money to pay for the thing they are against. So I first of all believe that right now that is a big opportunity to attract a lot of people towards you in this space. Second, I believe that like I'm a big believer of like, well, right now, which every time your company grows, you might change your mind about like how you believe things should be run. But right now, the size my company is, I'm not shying away from any of the ideas that I have or trying to help people with the maximum potential I can. Because like I said before, it's not about the money. Like the money will come if you get enough exposure and enough people want to be a part of what you're doing. Like that's an inevitable fact. If you're successful, the money will come. So for me, it's all about spreading the awareness, helping other people grow. And I think every vegan entrepreneur almost is more about that aspect of helping, contributing, providing those solutions rather than making that profit. So I think that's a very interesting mindset for an entrepreneur to be in because it makes the journey a lot easier when you don't want the fancy watch or when you don't want the fancy car or when you don't want any of the other things. Like I live a very minimalistical lifestyle. I buy secondhand clothes. I drive an old car. I mean, I would love to buy a Tesla, but and the reason I want to, like, if I would ever buy an electric car, I buy a Tesla. Why? Because I support that mission of the entrepreneur that's running it. And I think that's a really big thing that in a world where automation takes over almost everything, including factories, that means costs will go down, which means the purpose of a brand is like, that's everything right now. Like, and it's only going to get stronger. So Elon Musk has a clear purpose, has a clear vision. It's something almost any vegan connects with. So the same as in like for business owners and like where you start with like veganism is really small still and the percentage of entrepreneurs are even smaller. I think that is the opportunity right now is that we can really help people grow and this market will only get bigger and bigger. And if you right now are one of the, because there's not only one, there's like, it's going to be a lot, but if you're one of the people who has a vegan entrepreneur podcast, or if you're one of the people who have a vegan entrepreneur vlog or a Facebook group or whatever, and that gets bigger and bigger, then the more people start to learn to engage this way, I mean, you will be the leading figure within that space. So I think there's a lot of opportunity right now.
Yep, that's a great point. And I think tying into, for example, what the founder of Airbnb was living, right? Because he was starting a whole new concept that no one had ever really heard about. One of the investors talked about, like, listen, this is your opportunity. You're small enough to be able to connect with every single one of your customers, right? So this is a great opportunity because you could literally take the time and ask everyone who's following you and say, how can I help you better, right? Because when you're growing, sure, you could get the feedback, but it's a lot less genuine and a lot less personal as opposed to when you're starting out very small.
Yeah. And totally. And like even if you look, even if you look at Airbnb, like what they did in the beginning is they went to people's houses and offered them free photography so they could then like learn about the experience and optimize it and connect and look what the people wanted and then optimize the experience within their app. It's a really insane story, the Airbnb story, and how they grew their company so fast and so big.
Right. And it's because exactly they went to such a microscopic level and they fine-tuned the little parts that really created the big difference that they were able to scale and really create a better experience for everyone in that space.
Yeah, totally.
Basically, if you could break it down to a few components, what are the keys to building a successful brand online, like from a process standpoint? So like from a day-to-day, is it like building an email list? Is it doing YouTube videos? Is it reaching out individually on Instagram? What are the keys, for example, of building a successful brand?
I think the key with building a successful brand starts with self-awareness. So it starts with like, what are you good at? And I think the next part is building clarity and focus around what it is you're trying to communicate. I noticed it by myself as well. Like I said, I'm only 2 years in this whole thing, and I'm still figuring out my exact story for each business and project that I'm trying to do. And I think the clearer, because the world is so noisy, I think the hardest part today is the fact that even if you have a really good product, like it's the ability to get your product seen and then like to get people to respond to it. And I think the secret to that is like having a very clear message, being very clear, and not talking around the subject too much, which is something that is a continuous process and that's changing every time, because as I grow, my business grows, and as my business grows, it adapts and my vision changes a little bit and it's still molding and shaping. So I think clarity and focus and self-awareness, those are the three things that you have to start with. And then regarding which channel, I think that also depends on the time. Like today, Instagram is very, very good. But I think what I did with Lekker Vega, for example, is every channel is a different stage in the awareness process, from discovery towards becoming a super fan of the platform. So, for example, we need Facebook ads, we need collaboration, we need all these things to grow and to get awareness, because organic traffic is basically that. Like, that's for me, organic traffic only happens when the community is so involved in what you're doing. But today, basically, like, people only have a limited amount of attention. So let's put it in an example of the market. If you've got €100, If a person has €100, he can spend it on buying shoes from Nike. So if you build another shoe brand and this person always buys Nike, or the market always spends their money on Nike, now suddenly you have to fight against Nike to get that. Well, the same goes with the attention. So when it's so busy and so crowded, it's kind of hard for people to discover who you are. So I really believe that we need paid advertisement. We need collaborative opportunities, just like this podcast, for people to get the awareness. Then kind of the second stage is like the omnipresence. You have to be there every time on every platform in a different way according to the mindset of the consumer who's using that platform. So Facebook, for example, is more like people read that to consume news or to be in groups and engage in community and share viral videos. And like, that's really Facebook. Then Instagram is more personal, I feel like you get a more personal connection and you see less of these viral videos because they don't have the sharing ability as strongly as Facebook has. And then YouTube is kind of like you click it open and you sit down and you relax, or you take a piece of paper and you watch it and you study or whatever. But like, it's more like a longer form consuming type of platform. more like TV. Like, it's replacing TV. And
right,
like those three things is how I'm using that for Lekker Vega. And then, Twitter. Of course, yeah, Twitter as well. But Twitter, for example, Twitter would be way low, way more at the super right. fan area. Yep. Because Twitter, like, I don't want to deal with people just Twittering me bullshit. Like, I want to have right. people asking me direct questions and like doing stuff like that. So before somebody, like when I started as a life coach, I was like giving away free coaching to a lot of non-vegans in the beginning, because I didn't have the idea of going so niche as in going into the vegan market. And there's so much people who were asking for help, and I was 1000% sure I could help them, but nobody wanted my free coaching. Why? Because somebody who gives free coaching, like, he must not be that good, right? Or somebody like you. Coaching is about or consulting, whatever, is taking advice from somebody else. So this other person has to be an expert in your perspective or perception before you're willing to invest your time, because you only have a limited amount of that, into that person. So same with Twitter. When I want to connect with people on Twitter, it needs to be that they are really like, they know me, they know who I am. So for me, that's like, it's different than those three. But in a different way, like if you're a TV show, maybe you want to use Twitter for people to comment on the TV show, and that's nothing personal about it. So it really depends on the purpose you have within the platform and the mindset of the user who's active on that platform. So the next stage is, I know a lot of people say you don't need a website anymore, etc., but I really believe you need a website, because it can basically be a hub of the content. Like, let's say I want to learn more about your podcast guests. Now, I would want to see them on a website and browse through all the vegan entrepreneurs that you interviewed and learn more about them, and do their like go deeper into the content that I just listened to. So yeah, that's then the next stage is kind of like people taking action. So promotions, win actions, challenges, going to your website, and then more intimacy. That's the next step. So Facebook groups, newsletters, podcasts, like to get people to listen and find your podcast. It needs to happen. Either they really search for vegan entrepreneurs, or they find you in a Facebook group, or they learn about you on YouTube, or they saw you on Instagram. So they need to discover you before they can find you in your podcast. Same goes for Snapchat. So then we slowly go down, and then we get to conversion. So after intimacy, we go to the conversion part. And then we say, okay, well, we have a magazine they can download, the last issue. Leave their email address, and then we use that email address to advertise to them on Facebook, which would then try to collect the leads of people who are seriously interested in becoming a subscriber to the magazine, which they will receive a physical magazine. And then, of course, because it's a nonprofit organization, then from there on, they try to convert people to give donations or become a volunteer. So that's kind of the idea, how I think about it. Like, what I do is I write down all the tools we use for communication, and then try to create a journey map from discovery to super fan, and then like, where does each platform fit in? And then of course we go way deeper and like build strategies around that. But yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
All right, okay. And catering a product, or maybe taking a step back on that, so like building the credibility, becoming self-aware, right? Like, because I feel with the ladies trend, if you look at Ty Lopez, if you look at Alex Becker, the people that are recurringly coming, it's such an easy outlet for the people who are just starting out on social media. I'm talking like 16 and up, right, all the way to 20s, or just starting in their entrepreneurial journey. And it's easy to see that and see like, okay, let me just start social media marketing. But without that credibility and without that positioning, it's hard for people to take you seriously, right? Like you mentioned, people value their time. And how do they know that listening to your advice is worthwhile? So building that credibility, is it just a question of first, let's say you want to do social media marketing, building a brand beforehand and afterwards, because people are asking you about it, you go ahead and show them how you did it? Or can you just start doing social media marketing because you feel you have the skill?
I think too many people think they have the skill, but they never prove they have the skill.
Exactly.
Like, if you don't prove it, you don't have the skill. So you first need to do things that will bring results, which then you get bigger results, and then you get bigger clients, and they get bigger results, and they get bigger clients, and they get bigger results, and slowly you scaffold your way up the ladder. Like, there's no way that any organization that has some credibility or some reputation or some name that's going to allow you to help them build their brand if you cannot show them that you can do it. Like, only people who are desperate are willing to take desperate people. So if you, like, let's say your podcast, for example, I never did a podcast yet. So I cannot teach people how to do a podcast. And you've clearly shown that you know how to do a podcast. So if I wanted to start a podcast and I would like to hire somebody to do a podcast, I would go to somebody who did a podcast. Same thing that I talked about previously. And I think too many people, they buy a course and they learn everything they need to know. And now they think they can charge €300 an hour. And it doesn't work like that, because nobody's gonna pay you. So you really have to, like, you're worth what the market is willing to pay you. And to build trust, especially on the internet, like, for me, if you meet me one-on-one in person, I'm pretty sure I would be able to talk to you and make an impression about the knowledge that I have and the experience that I have, even if I don't show you anything, within one or two meetings, that you would feel comfortable working with me. But online, like, first of all, we need to create, of course, websites. We need to create a brand around ourselves. So if people Google us or find us, like, basically the research you did on me, I consciously created the path for you to do the research on.
Yep.
So we need to establish ourselves. Like, branding is all about controlling every touch point a consumer or a person potentially interacts with you. So that means every single aspect. So that means your website, your LinkedIn profile, but also the reactions that you do on your posts. Like, every single thing on the internet is documented forever. So the ability for people to research the person they want to work with today is extremely easy. Like, If you're gonna go, that's also why personal branding, I think, is a must for everybody who's alive, who wants to get a job, who wants to get whatever. Because if you get a job tomorrow and you're the other person who has the same college degree or has the same, like, CV, ID, like the same basic, almost the same skill sets. Yeah. Well, if he's more visible on the internet, it's very likely he's going to get the job because he's building more trust with the person who's going to hire him. So,
yep.
I think that it's all about that. And I think the journey for people, like all the people who are hiring me as a coach, they knew me already for like 5 to 6 months and watched me create more content, watched me give more free value. Like, I did like 20 free coaching sessions in my Facebook group for the vegan entrepreneur to start the group. And I did a free course called The Internet Mindset to help people get started as an entrepreneur and to help them understand the basic principles. And this course is, well, right now I think it's on YouTube, but I'm going to launch it again pretty soon on my vegan entrepreneur community website. But like, I did a lot of things. And even then, it was hard for the first people to really trust me and go there. So then I started working for, like, I think it was €200 a month for a local snack bar here, and create content. Like, once a week, once every 2 weeks, I made a video of his snack bar, and it got results. Like, one video got 500,000 views with $80 of advertising or something. And a lot of people shared it. And like those results then got me the job at Lekker Vega, which is the nonprofit organization. And now this will give me a lot of publicity. Like, I'm not only the guy who organizes and manages the project and creates the project, but I'm also the guy hosting it. Like, I'm the host. And what we do is we are cooking vegan food or vegetarian food, but in this case it's all vegan because I'm the host, with influencers in the Netherlands. And then afterwards, we do an in-depth interview with these people as well. And those are the two pieces of content that we put on our YouTube channel. And from that, we create little bites of content to distribute on the internet and slowly start building up from there. But just being the host on there already gave me a lot of credibility again and built my network with the influencers. And it's the influencers and social media people, the people who want to inspire others through social media that I want to have in my coaching business, The Young Human. So slowly, strategically, I try to position myself in a way that I will get what I want. And this takes a lot of time, a lot of effort. And I think just following a course is just the start of your entrepreneurial career or social media marketing career, or like you have to do what you have to practice what you preach, basically.
Yep. Absolutely. Exactly. I love that. I wish we could go on, Randy. I really appreciate this.
Well, if you have time, I can still ramble more. I enjoy it. So
how about I have a meeting in like 10 minutes, so I'd rather wrap it up now. But damn, sure. If you want to come back on, if we can make another interview, like us, we can reschedule. Like, I'd love to have you for a second.
Yeah, no, I would love that.
Dope, perfect, man. Last thing, what's the best way people can reach out to you and connect with you?
Well, first, join me at The Vegan Entrepreneur on Facebook. It's a Facebook group. If you can't access it because I'm considering making it private, then go to veganentrepreneur.co or veganentrepreneurcommunity.com. And then you'll get access there, or look me up at younghuman.com.